Welcome to our Soul Food Priest podcast. It is great to have you. Can we believe in a gendered soul? You know, can we believe in this? And because we believe in a gendered body, but can we believe in a gendered soul? And it's my understanding that, and if we understand, if we look at like Catholic teaching over the years and tradition, we wouldn't so much speak of a gendered soul. We would say that we each have a soul. But it, my reading of a lot of Edith Stein says she talks specifically about the feminine characteristics of the soul. So I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts there, if you don't mind. Not to put
well,
you on the
spot. No, I mean, this is a really interesting question that I have not yet wrestled through myself. So I don't have a fully formed answer. I'm very intrigued by Edith Stein's work. And I really love her. I have a picture of her right right above where I'm looking right now. She's on my wall of holy women. And I have found her essays on women to be very helpful in many ways. But this question about a gendered soul is something I still want to dig into more. Because I think the question is how, I mean, on the one hand, you know, sex has to do with the body, right? It's biological beings. Like, sex is a characteristic of embodiment. Souls don't have a sex. Bodies do. But human beings are unities of body and soul. And so I think the question is, does the profundity of that union then actually give some kind of character? Does the body influence the soul in such a way or give a kind of character to the soul, that there is a distinction at the level of the soul between male and female humans? And that I don't know. I mean, I think that's a really interesting question. I'm a little bit wary of the idea, because I think it could then be misused in the way that kind of gender identity has almost become this gender of the soul or gender of the mind thing that's not connected to the body. So I do think that, I think the question is, how much does the sex of the body influence the soul? Right. When I die and my soul is separated from my body, I'm still me, but I'm not, there's something incomplete that can only be completed until the resurrection. Right. But presumably who I am has been very significantly shaped by the fact that I've been a female body for my entire existence, right? So I like the idea that there is such a profound unity that it shapes the soul in a certain way. But I don't know. I can't like come down hard one way or the other. I'm intrigued by the idea.
He asked that question to Dr. Peter Kraft one time too. I was there in the audience.
Well, what did he say?
He definitely leaned towards the possibility of more of a gendered nature within a soul, and I don't want to misquote him because it was like four or 500 years ago. But I think, as I recall, I think he was much more open, you know, in the sense of discussing kind of that possibility. I think Edith, the way that she discusses, is that she talks about like the nurturing nature of femininity, which may be a different topic. But she talks about kind of these more feminine characteristics of knowledge and empathy, of course, that are kind of writ into a feminine soul, or the feminine characteristics in a soul. And I think the question for me that I've been trying to grapple with, so to speak, over the years is, you know, my understanding of Catholic tradition would say that we wouldn't so much speak of a male soul, feminine soul, but we can speak more of feminine human characteristics and male characteristics in the soul.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't like the idea of talking about masculinity and femininity in abstract things, unless we're talking about something that's like an analogy.
Right.
One thing I do like about Edith is that she, you know, she talks about these different dimensions of our nature, and there's the human common human nature. So men and women are both fully human. So all of the faculties of being human are shared by both men and women, right? So fully rational, all that kind of stuff. And then there's a level of sexual difference. So there are differences here, but those differences are rooted in the body. So I think that always has to be the case. And then there's also the individual. So you might have, so even though Edith talks about, you know, that there might be these tendencies for, you know, feminine people to be this way and for masculine people to be this way, she also recognizes the fact that the individual might be more typically masculine, even if she's a woman.
Right.
So I think that I like that recognition as well. And it also seems like her goal is that every person is being fully formed into a flourishing human being, right? So even if women maybe have the inside track on certain things like nurturing, it's not an exclusive to the domain of women, but in fact, maybe men could learn how to develop the nurturing aspect of their own nature from women, right? So I think there is this sense in which we learn how to be more fully human from each other, rather than, again, the polarity view, which is like men are rational, women are emotional, right? Which is too simplistic. So yeah, I want to learn more from Edith, but
And so one question that I want to pose to the two of you who love Edith. So I, in reading on her, is it the Letters to Women? So in it, she said something that was very intriguing to me, and that was regarding femininity. One thing that education needs to focus on, especially with regards to women, is their emotional health, you know, that, and I, that struck me really strongly because I read it probably when I was in my 30s and I was thinking, I'm still grappling with emotional issues that, you know, maybe didn't get tended to at a younger age because we're not really trained on that level, especially in the academic field. And so my question to the two of you would be, you know, what would that look like? And especially you, Dr. Abigail, as you're at Notre Dame and Father Ben as a pastor and a priest, like what would that look like in the academic field for women, and how could that help? Because it just seems so intriguing to me, her assessment of making that in what, the 1930s? And here we are, and I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in the idea of developing education or curricula or approaches to education that take into account sex differences. And I think the realm of emotions is one that's relevant to talk about. Again, not falling into this, you know, men aren't emotional, women are. Rather, I would say in general, males and females are emotional in different ways. And part of that is because emotions are very much tied up in our bodily life. It has a lot to do with hormones. It has a lot to do with sexual development, right? So when you have, especially say adolescence going through puberty, the experience and the kind of the hormones flooding the bodies are different at that time. And so that's going to create different effects. And so what would it look like to have an education system that's responsive to that and is actually trying to form young people with those differences in mind? And so I think there could be so many benefits to sex-specific education in that way. In fact, one of my projects I'm going to be working on here in this job I've just started is working with a girls' school in Massachusetts, a Catholic girls' school in Massachusetts, to create a Genius of Woman curriculum, basically, and following Edith Stein and trying to figure out what that would look like.
Yeah. Wow.
But I think both sexes could benefit from education that focuses on emotion and like what emotional health looks like. But I do think what is emphasized might need to be different for boys and for girls, and also depending on the stage of development. Because I think maybe pre-puberty, there might not be as much of a huge difference. But then once you get into puberty, I do think that, you know, there are sex differences that that make a difference, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting, too, because right now our culture is trying to do the opposite of that in education, you know, with us, with all the things that are happening, is just kind of erasing it. However, maybe not focusing on the importance of masculinity and femininity, especially there at the ages of puberty, we might be where we are because we didn't spend enough time focusing on the beauty of both of the sexes, you know?
Right. So.
Yeah. Well, I would say what's happening is not so much you have the erasure of sexual difference, but then you have this obsession with gender identity differences. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You almost have this obsession with masculinity and femininity, but detached from the body. So just as these kind of stereotypes, right, or as something like that we have to put onto the body. Right. Yeah. So, well, you know, now people will say, okay, well, this gender atypical girl is really a boy. And so now we have to change her body. So it looks, you know, so we have to almost masculinize the body and suppress the natural femininity of the body in order to match this more male typical soul. I mean, it's really fascinating, but also so regressive, you know, it's just kind of shocking to me when I think about when I started my feminist studies and how, you know, if I were to go back in time to my like 20-year-old self and say, hey, guess what's going to be happening in 15 years, you know, I think I would have been like, what, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's where we are, you know, that you're a girl if you like to play with dolls, and you're a boy if you like to have short hair and do sports, you know, so let's medicalize your body. Like it's,
Yeah. Do you, maybe to that point, Abigail, I'm curious from a priest perspective, what advice would you have for priests that are trying to preach on this issue, on the issue of transgender? Because, I mean, in no way, shape or form do I hold myself up, but I can say that I've preached on this quite a few times, and every single time I've ever talked about it, I've had one of two things happen. Number one, people that say, thank you, Father, for talking about this. Mm-hmm. And then another group that says, look, I completely disagree with everything you said, Father, but thank you for talking about this. You know? And so, which I appreciate. Right.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's actually generated some really beautiful discussions with people who completely disagree with my points. And, which is great for me because it teaches me, you know, like I try to listen to them and try to gather their position. Do you have any advice for priests on like, how do I tackle this? Cause from a priest perspective, I don't, you know, a lot of the guys are like, dude, I'm not going to talk about this because I've got an 8-year-old altar server serving here and his mom sit over here. And if I talk about something that ruffles her feathers, you know what, I'm just not going to touch it. On the other hand, I think most of the priests that I know very much agree that it needs to get addressed. So I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts there.
Yeah, I have some thoughts. I mean, you'll have to report back and tell me if they're helpful or not. but I think that when the liturgy gives you the opportunity to speak about a Catholic anthropology, especially sexual difference and the importance of sexual difference and how maleness and femaleness are part of God's self-revelation, right? They signify our capacity for interpersonal communion. They are an image of the Trinity, right? Like male and female. So anytime you have the opportunity to roll out some of that theology, I would say do it. Mm-hmm. And just roll it out without even directly talking about the trans thing. But if you want to bring that in explicitly, after, you know, talking about some of the beauty of a Catholic understanding, you can say, you know, and people, and right now people are really longing for the sacramentality of the body, this focus on gender, for the body to reveal the person, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes we look for it in the wrong places. You know, we seek it out through technology, or we seek it out through, you know, something like that. And I think pointing out the fact that the desires that attract people to what I call the gender paradigm are very Christian desires. They're desires for wholeness. They're desires for the body to mean something, the body to reveal the person, the body to be sacramental. They're desires for belonging, for acceptance. And those are like deeply Christian desires, the desire for conversion, right? Like the whole self conversion, put on a new man, right? Those are, if anything, like those are the, like the best desires to have. And so I think focusing on that as well and saying those are good desires and it's good that people want these things, but those desires can't be met by simply, you know, altering the body. Like they're desires of the soul that can only really be filled through Christ. And then I guess anytime you preach on this, I would avoid using the word ideology. I think that's a little too, even though I do think there some of this stuff is deeply ideological, I would use the word like theory or framework or something. And then I would end with, you know, and I would love, you know, if this is part of your story, if you've struggled with gender dysphoria, or if you have questions about gender, I would love, you know, to hear about what you're going through. And, you know, I'm glad you're here. Welcome. And I would love to get to know you, you know, and just kind of end it there. Right. So there's like this invitation, and you make a distinction between, I guess, some of the harmful ideas and then the people who might accept those ideas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know. Those are just some thoughts that I try to do that in my own work. It doesn't always work. You know, there are still people who just are like, oh, you're a bigot, you know, but I think those people tend not to really listen to what I say, but just kind of reject me out of hand. Mm-hmm. But I think those are some ways, I guess, maybe to like try to sail through Scylla and Charybdis there to get people to hear what you're saying.
That's great. Thank you. It's one of the most beautiful things as a parish priest that we are able to be with people in all different aspects of their life, right? In different walks of their life, and the joy, the hopes, the mess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's where dollops. We all are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was something kind of going back to thinking about feminism. You know, I had a conversation with I have a 15-year-old son. And I was talking about, I don't even know why we were talking about feminism. We were talking about feminism. I don't know. That's what I do. And I was like, you know, the thought struck me. The interesting thing is about feminism was that it was, let's run more to masculinity, that which we are rejecting, let's run more to it, rather than let's dig into the beauty of true femininity and the gift and the beauty that lies therein. And I mean, it is in the saints' writings, but definitely JP2 was kind of one of the ones to really say, okay, let's spend some time really looking at the beauty of femininity. And then it was kind of ironic because Dr. Abigail, I swear, I think it was the next day. So I drive an hour to get here to work. And so I was listening to the Matt Frad podcast and your phenomenal interview with him. And you said those exact words that I had just spoken to my son. And I was like, wow, oh, that's awesome. I find that we, whether it's priests or just everybody, we are not digging into what is really beautiful about the two sexes, not spending enough time there. Instead, we're trying to reject that which we don't like about the sexes. So,
mm-hmm. Right. And I think you're seeing that rejection on both sides. I think that's one thing that's fueling the number of young people who are wanting to identify as the opposite sex. Because I think our culture has very negative views or not views, negative stories, negative narratives about what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman right now. Mm-hmm. You know, men are predators, men are toxic, masculinity is bad. And then women are victims, you know, women are objects, right? And there's some truth to that in the sense that those dynamics are part of the fall. I mean, Edith Stein talks about this, like the dynamic of harmony between the sexes has been distorted by sin into a dynamic of domination. So that dynamic of domination is always going to be at work. But then the problem becomes when our stories about manhood and womanhood only have that dynamic in them. Then I think it creates this flight from masculinity and a flight from femininity. You kind of reject the thing that is imposed upon you because you don't want it. And then you kind of try to take refuge in the other side. So I think we need stronger narratives and better narratives about manhood and womanhood that aren't just caricatures, right? Mm-hmm. But that also aren't part of this narrative of domination that actually invite that would like call to girls and boys to think, wow, like I want to be a woman. Like, mm-hmm. I want to grow up right. to be a woman. Like what mm-hmm. kind of story can we tell our girls that makes them think, mm-hmm. I can't wait to grow up to be a woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say too, we could probably even see that dynamic with marriage and family, where, mm-hmm. you know, so many people coming from broken homes just say, if that's what marriage is, I want nothing to do with mm-hmm. it. So we just throw out marriage, or let's just redefine marriage. But I have found that as we teach the theology of the body, whether it's on the human person or on marriage and family or the consecrated life, when you actually reveal the beauty of marriage and what God originally intended and what he does intend, these are things that most people have not heard. The beauty is what most people have not heard and want to learn more. And so I would even say that could even go towards vocations as well.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, just to echo both of those points, I think mm-hmm. from my perspective, one of the major problems is one of simple vocabulary. Right. I mean, sometimes people can be using the same word with two very different meanings, right? But then also trying to give people just basic vocabulary. For instance, sometimes when I teach on some of these issues, I'll just start off by saying, asking everyone, tell me the difference between sex as a noun, sex as a verb, gender, and genitalia. And
good now luck.
Yeah. These are educated people. Okay. Yeah. Then that, you know, with letters before their name, letters after the name. And they have no idea. And you know, and I just say that because I think sometimes just the issue of basic vocabulary mm-hmm. is a problem in kind of grappling with these issues.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge problem. It's a really huge problem because especially the word gender. I mean, gender means like 10 different things right now that are some of which are in tension or even contradiction. The biggest contradiction I see is gender is a social construct and gender is this innate identity that you realize from a young age that might be at odds with your socialization. Like those are two mm-hmm. fundamentally different ideas about what gender is. One is something that's external that you might internalize, but it's something that's kind of imposed upon you by society. Whereas the other thing is internal, it's innate. It's something you realize. And those concepts are just starkly different. But then what you hear in the discourse is just people going from one definition to another. You know, they'll say in one sentence, like gender is just a social construct. Also, gender identity is profoundly real and you realize it from a young age, you know, there's this equivocation happening with gender. And I think that fuels a lot of the confusion because then the ordinary person is just going to sort of think, oh, geez, I don't know what's going on. Okay. Right. You know, sure. Whatever right. you say, just tell me, you know, I just want to be polite, you know? <Yeah. laughs> And then you have this whole kind of engine, this linguistic engine that's just recreating our categories about mm-hmm. what manhood and womanhood even mean. So yes, linguistic confusion is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. This is fantastic. And Dr. Abigail, thank you for your insights here. I mean, this is awesome and I appreciate it. Kind of switching gears here, as we kind of come to close, I have to ask you a very profound theological question. And that is, what do your children like to eat?
Oh my gosh. Do you have 2 hours for me to just kvetch about this and you can comfort me? I have the pickiest children. It's so depressing because I just, you know, before you become a parent,
like at least
I was like, oh, I'm going to have super chill kids. They'll eat anything, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, no. Although I have to say it does seem to be a phase, but my kids go through a very picky phase starting around 3 and kind of getting better around 6. And so like, as you know, my oldest is 9. So I'm like, oh, okay. He actually eats more foods than he used to. But mm-hmm. what drives me crazy is that the things they don't like sometimes are like the lowest tier kind of kid food that you would want them to like. Like my kids hate mashed potatoes. And as an Idahoan, I find this to be a deep source of shame. But On the plus side, our weakness, our strength, right? Yeah, my kids. So my kids do. They love to snack. Like they love. They eat a lot of fruit. They love peanut butter, vegetables. You know, so they eat healthy, but you know, they don't like nice meals, let's just say. So my husband and I are like waiting for the day that we can actually cook a nice meal, you know, and our kids will be like, oh yay, thank you for cooking this.
Yeah. So they eat Nutella.
I don't know that I've ever given them Nutella, but I should. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah,
I think the Holy Spirit would want you to.
I just had some Nutella last night. Actually, so some of them did eat some last night. We had some on brownies.
My kids are loving my job only because they get paid in Nutella. Father Ben is like, do your kids need Nutella? And I'm like, no, we really don't. Okay, I'll give you 4 jars of Nutella. Like, so my kids are loving my job.
You know, when I lived in Scotland, we worked at a restaurant. This was when I was in graduate school before we had kids, when we were just newlyweds. We worked in this restaurant that one of their desserts was a Nutella pizza.
That is beautiful.
Very popular.
Okay. That's good. I think that, you know, I don't know if you can tell this. I see the tongues of fire coming to rest behind your head.
Yes.
Like, I think you're speaking in tongues. This is beautiful. Like a second Pentecost or something. Amazing. Listen, thank you so much for your time. Mm-hmm. This is so wonderful to gather your insights and joining us on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so we'd love to have you in Memphis sometime if your time ever permits.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have Memphis roots. My grandpa was the provost at what was then Memphis State University, although that's now University of Memphis. Yeah. So growing up, I would spend a lot of summers in Memphis. They lived on Lombardi Avenue at the time. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Wow. So, yeah. Wow. That is my mom's from Tennessee. Yeah.
Oh, your mom is okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic.
That is awesome. You know, as we were having this conversation, I was thinking, how could this be related to food? Correct me if I'm wrong. Could this be like a sweet and salty kind of thing? Mm. Masculinity, femininity, where like, you know, like one salty and then one sweet, and you have to have a good combination of the two. And then the salted caramel really blends the two. Like that's the complementarity of the sexes, right?
Men are like we're somehow salty or something.
No, y'all could be sweet.
I feel like I'm pretty salty. I'm not.
I think in our relationship, I'm probably more the salty in my
opinion. Yeah.
Probably. I think my parishioners would call me salty. It's great. Thank you so much, Abigail.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Please send our greetings and blessings to your family too.
Yeah. And we do want to let everybody know that if you want to find out more on Dr. Abigail Favale, you can go to her website at abigailfavale.wixsite.com. We'll put that in our show notes and check out her latest books. You're amazing. Love what you're doing. And this is awesome. I'm totally fangirling over here.
Well, thank you all so much.
Yeah. And to our listeners, don't forget to put soul in your food to give food to your soul. God bless you.